On this episode of the podcast, Todd interviews Ben Crookston, CEO and founder of Train Heroic.
Hey guys, this is Todd Nee from South Loop Strength and Conditioning, and right now I am on the Skype machine with Ben Crookston, the CEO of Train Heroic. Say hi, Ben.
What's going on, everybody?
Ben and I have known each other for a while, long before South Loop Strength and Conditioning or Train Heroic actually existed in any sort of reasonable form. We met at River North CrossFit in Chicago. We were both coaching there. And then, Ben, why don't you give the people a little bit of a breakdown of what you do, what Train Heroic does, where you came from, and why you care about people having a good software for their fitness?
Okay, cool. I think I'm also going to take the opportunity to dig into our early endeavors together, potentially, because those are probably interesting to some people. Let's see, background, give me a quick high level. What did you want from me?
I want to know why you started Train Heroic and what it is.
Right. Okay, so, you know, once upon a time, I was a high school teacher. At that time, I was on the far south side of Chicago, really working with kids, both in the classroom and then after school in kind of gym environments as well as coaching. And at that time, you know, I had played college sports, and I was really just dumbfounded that there were no services in which I could kind of pair the level of expertise that I received in college with kind of my athletes, my students. And so really it started kind of at this high school level, and it was all about connecting coaches to athletes anytime, anywhere. So we really wanted to bring expert instruction into that setting particularly. And then as I started it, I was working pretty heavily in the CrossFit space, the weightlifting space, strength conditioning in general, and started to see kind of broad applications for a similar concept. And so I guess kind of when founding a business, you start small and then kind of start to see, well, how big is the market? Where could this thing go? What needs can really be addressed, and how many people can we help out? And where can we create value? And it seemed to be that a lot of these environments had kind of common analogs that we could solve for with a similar application. And so that is kind of where we're at today.
Sure. So quick question, though, for people who don't know, what even is Train Heroic?
Okay, so Train Heroic is really a software company. We connect coaches to athletes anytime, anywhere. And so that looks different for different folks. You know, for some people, they're coming to us because they really want a low-cost way to receive virtual coaching from one of the top names in the game. Maybe they want weightlifting coaching, gymnastics coaching, CrossFit coaching, football coaching, whatever. And so they're looking for a top expert, and they have a little bit of money in their pocket, and they can do that through us by receiving their workout, being a part of a larger community, doing that training together, so kind of feeling embedded in something larger than just doing it by themselves, and then even having some comparative context. So seeing other athletes who are doing that training, comparing themselves on leaderboards, messaging back and forth, and receiving daily instruction from their coach. So that's, you know, that's some people. Others are coaches who come to us because they want to connect with a larger audience, or they just want to manage their athletes that are in front of them and get a better handle on what the heck's going on. And so really there's a bunch of different use cases, but it all happens kind of through the internet, through software. So we have mobile apps, we have web applications, and we have a marketplace that kind of organizes and facilitates the brokering of that relationship between coaches and athletes.
Got it. So quick summary of who Ben is, what Train Heroic is for listeners who don't know. Now let's talk about some more interesting stuff, right? Because, I mean, Train Heroic is a great product. You're a great dude. And I want to get into what makes you tick and kind of find out some background stuff that, you know, I think everyone who, you know, has an interest in fitness or business is going to be interested in, like, what sort of processes do you go through? How do you end up where you are today, right? So when you were teaching, were you part of like a Teach for America style thing? Is that correct?
Yeah, so I enrolled in the Teach for America Corps, kind of, I guess, coming out of college, I came out right during the market crashing, and I kind of looked at that as an opportunity to be like, hey, how the heck can I help out most in our country right now? And to me, that looked like working with kind of our at-risk youth, working with people who are on, you know, one end of or the one side of that table that were kind of getting screwed over, and saying, you know, well, what if these people were more prepared? Is there a way I could help out in some fashion? And then also just learn a crap load by throwing myself into a wildly hard and difficult situation. And so I did that for 2 years on the far south side of Chicago. Couple different schools working specifically at the high school level.
Sure. So I know yourself and a few other folks who have participated in similar types of programs, right? Which is for a lot of people, it's a very hard dose of reality, right? Kind of jumping into this this situation where you have some sort of, you know, higher motive, and all of a sudden you're confronted with, you know, the realities of an education system that isn't necessarily optimized for people, the realities of people not necessarily wanting your help, even if you think you can give it. What kind of lessons did you learn from that? What was your experience like teaching people?
Man, the lessons are pretty wide and varied. I think a few things, you know, really that one of the biggest lessons that I worked to teach people was that work can actually overcome things. Hard work is a fantastic framework to get things done. And so, you know, content as, you know, something that we're teaching people is one thing, but more so teaching people how to behave and giving them a better operating system for living, I think is a significantly bigger value that we kind of bestow upon people. So, you know, that was a lesson that hit me pretty quickly. And then two, I think that, you know, it just globally teaches you about interacting with people, and that we're all pretty simple beings. We all have, you know, our most basic needs and desires that need to be fulfilled. And then once those things are kind of taken care of, we can amplify and really start to elevate our performance. And so, you know, I think in that, you know, 2 year window, and also just kind of in college and high school before that, you know, I've always been just a performance junkie, and one of the biggest kind of bedrocks for what I did back then as well as today is kind of this notion of deliberate practice. And so, you know, it's something that we really worked on and reinforced within Teach for America, within teaching in general, but isn't broadly applied to, I guess, the business world. And so I think putting some of those frameworks and patterns in place, even at our company and at our professional development level, has been pretty instrumental at developing our people, getting us to perform better so that we can serve our customers better and provide a lot of value.
Yeah, sure. So you're sort of seeing this connection between teaching students, coaching people, and then running a business in terms of basically figuring out how to motivate people and how to improve the way that they see the world, right? You said something about operating systems, right? In terms of trying to upgrade someone's operating system. What do you mean by that?
I think what I mean by giving somebody an operating system is, you know, what are the base parameters and kind of just if then statements that govern your day-to-day life? You know, so like, what are the priorities you focus on every day? How many things are you trying to get done, and which things are you really focused on doing? How can you be most potent in achieving your goal each and every day, each and every hour, each and every minute? And then how do you do that, not just on a micro level as an individual, but part of something larger within kind of that continuum and part of an ecosystem, which would be, you know, our company, or even globally, more globally, our customers and our athletes and our coaches, that entire network. How can we be influential in that space? How can we have an impact? And how can the day-to-day things we're doing, the minute-to-minute things we're doing, influence the outcomes that we're shooting for?
Sure, and then in this concept of trying to basically upgrade someone's operating system, what do you do if someone is not necessarily internally motivated, right? Like it's one thing to say, okay, cool, I have some checklists you can follow. I have some ideas about deliberate practice. I can give you feedback on your movement if I'm coaching you. I can give you feedback on your performance if I'm trying to get you to be a better programmer or salesperson. But how do you handle someone who may be resistant to changing or may not have that kind of internal motivation to want to get better?
Yeah, it totally depends. I think the hard truth in the matter is that it depends on what your timeline for outcome is. And so what I mean by that would be, do you have 3 to 6 months to get this outcome to be achieved? Working with that person or that subject that might not be totally motivated or totally willing? Or do you have something longer term? Do you have 3 to 5 years to really achieve that goal and that outcome with that subject? And I think it's important to consider the difference in timeline because the possibilities are really different. In the near term, you can't manufacture motivation. And so you kind of really need somebody who's at least intrinsically bought into what they're doing if you want to achieve that goal. If we were talking about the business world, in a fast-paced startup, very practically, there's no way we could be hiring people who don't love this thing as much as we love this and who aren't bought into this as much as we are bought into this, who are willing to work super hard, super passionately on these goals. There's no way we could do that because we need to have results today, tomorrow, and the day after. We're not on a timeline as an early stage startup where you can have, 6 years to realize this person's development and eventually get them to be intrinsically motivated. That being said, there are plenty of forms where you do have a longer timeline, and there are plenty of tactics you can kind of take. And I think what it starts with is really having aligning kind of interests. And so getting the person in question to verbalize their goals. And state those things out loud, maybe even publicize those goals in some form or mechanism, and have them truly be bought into those things, and then show them through very tiny increments kind of this deliberate practice loop where they're setting the goal, you're giving them some form of expert instruction, you work with them specifically to create a structured program that's going to get them there, and then you give them feedback all along the way that's going to kind of allow them to achieve that outcome. And I think it's the feedback that's mission critical, especially with those people who might not be, totally intrinsically motivated to see that, hey, I'm actually making progress. Because when you start to see that feedback and you start to see that progress, it becomes a really sticky and addictive substance. It's kind of the crack of success. Once you start to have a little bit of it, you kind of want more. And so giving that feedback early and giving it often is a pretty profound way to make sure that people stick around and continue to pursue that end.
Sure. So the most recent podcast that we did at Southwest Striking Conditioning with just Paul and myself was a discussion on goals for people, particularly within training. And one of the points that I was making was that a lot of people will come into the gym and want to do group classes, or they'll, want to work with me on an individual basis and do program design work. And, one of the big things I want to know is, what do you want out of training? Are you trying to compete in something? Are you trying to just look good and feel good? Like, what do you actually want? And I find that a lot of people have mixed goals and are unclear on their goals and don't really know what they're trying to get out of it. Do you have any, techniques that you use with people to make them clear on their goals and to make sure that they understand what they actually want out of something?
Sure. I think from a goal setting framework, it's hard to just, I'm not going to try to reinvent the wheel. I think a SMART framework, is a pretty decent mechanism to just have people create goals. But I think it's also just doing that with regularity. So, a SMART goal for anybody who's listening that doesn't really know, is basically making goals that are measurable, specific first, measurable, attainable. So something that they can realistically actually do within a given time bound, and then relevant so that they're going to have a real actual outcome with that goal. It's a goal that's meaningful in context, and then time bound. And I think that time bound piece is probably, especially with the early goal setting folks, the one that gets flubbed up the most, because the time bound, the time ending tends to be far too off in the distance. And so the more we can alleviate that or truncate that period such that making the actual time parameter really narrow, so the person can see some immediate success is mission critical. So making it attainable, and maybe even making the first couple goals, maybe a bit of a layup so that we see some early success and get the wins and build some confidence and build some buy-in. And then eventually starting to set those longer term goals. But I think like a big lesson I've learned even in the software world, you know, our software team works in what's called an agile framework. And agile kind of spun out of the lean manufacturing world and a few different other philosophies. But the global lesson is, hey, don't plan kind of this, you know, full year plan, this 5 year plan, this 10 year plan, any of those things. Sure, there might be some practical value in even just walking through those exercises. But I think probably what's more realistic is set some super short time period so you can be a little bit more agile and reactive to an ever-changing environment. You know, I could set a 10-year goal right now for what my career is going to be, but I can tell you that, especially working in tech, the landscape in 10 years is going to look nothing like it does today. And so it's probably going to be a pretty meaningless goal unless it's really broad and kind of, you know, fuzzy. And so I think setting short goals with people, doing that exercise far more regularly, and then achieving wins and kind of stacking those wins on top of one another tends to lead to better outcomes.
Sure. So you're sort of saying that get a short-term win, create buy-in, and then use that to leverage, you know, further behavior change or success.
Totally. Yeah. And I mean, I think it's kind of like a snowball, you know, like pack the thing small early, and then eventually it starts rolling up, it'd be bigger. But once it's bigger, it, you know, and it's rolling down a hill, it tends to have its own momentum. So you don't need to push the thing as hard. And I think that's kind of where we're trying to go towards. It's like, hey, we don't want to be this tiny little pebble thing. Like, let's build something big that's rolling downhill super fast and all on its own, so that we don't have to influence it too much. Once you get it to that point, you're in a good spot.
Sure. So it may be more important when working with people to get them some form of success that they can see, regardless of whether or not, you know, that's in alignment with what they think their long-term goals are or what your long-term goals are. It's more about just creating success and then building upon that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's interesting, right? Because we can, you know, look at someone's training goals, for example, and say they want to, you know, lose X amount of weight or be able to see their abs in the mirror and all that type of stuff, which for a lot of people could be kind of a long-term, medium-term goal. And, you know, it can be frustrating to try to progress towards that. But if we could figure out something short-term that they see a win in, you know, whether that's waking up, feeling more refreshed, or, you know, consistently hitting some sort of, you know, training regimen or something like that, they can use that to then leverage their success. That's cool. Do you make any sort of distinction between like outcome-based goals and then sort of more like, I don't know, routine-based goals in terms of like, you know, if say you want to lose 20 pounds, that's kind of out of your control, but you can do food prep every Sunday, for example.
Yeah, sorry, Ty. I think you were breaking up a little bit there. I didn't quite get that question.
Yeah, no, sorry. So, Do you ever differentiate between like an outcome-based goal, like say, you know, lose 20 pounds or, you know, get revenue up by 20% this quarter versus kind of more, you know, routine-based goals like meal prep every Sunday or make sure that we follow up with 20 leads per week?
Sure. I think both are valuable. So the action-based goals are what I might call just activity. And maybe you said that amidst all the kind of clatter there.
Sure.
Are valuable because, you know, the actual tactics or activity tend to lead to the outcome. So I don't think it's do one or the other. It's kind of do both. It might be, hey, what is the outcome you're looking for? And then maybe what are the activity goals or the solution type goals that you need to implement along the way? And then how do you measure that? You know, if what's maybe related to software, probably one of the most measurable and easy areas to assess would be sales. You know, if I know I have a quota of $15,000, I'm currently closing at something like 20%. It's very easy for me to back into how many leads I'm going to need in order to realize that goal, so long as I know what, you know, my average revenue per customer is and all that. You know, it's like, hey, maybe I'm selling at $1,000 per customer. I need 15 total customers, but I'm closing at 20%. Oh, crap. Okay, I need to go get a lot of leads here. How am I going to go get those? Maybe I need to call 10 people per day so that I have enough leads to actually fill that quota. And so I think doing that, then it's like, hey, I kind of backed into my activity goal, but I started at the outcome that I wanted. And then I aligned to figure out which activity are going to be relevant here. And then now let's set goals so that I can kind of parse those things out and break it out into more of a daily program, so to speak, that's going to allow me to achieve the goal at the end.
Sure. So let's get into Train Heroic itself a little bit more, since I've known you since this was just kind of an idea, and I remember meeting with you and Josh and talking about it over falafel and all that type of stuff. over the course of a few years, you guys have had I don't want to say full pivots in terms of, to use a little bit of jargon, in terms of what you're actually offering, but definitely the structure of the software and kind of what your goal with it has changed a little bit. Can you kind of walk through how you initially started it and then how you sort of changed what you were trying to offer?
Sure. So I guess part of our initial offering was really centralized around creating content for people. And we were like truly kind of, I guess, a brand in the space that had our own content. And part of that was driven by the fact that we were working in a market that really needed content. We were working primarily in kind of this high school segment. That's kind of my pedigree, right? And so once we started to permeate into other markets, CrossFit, weightlifting, performance training, professional training, all that kind of stuff, we realized quite immediately, like, hey, it's not necessarily about our content, it's about everybody's content. And so we stepped out from being kind of like a tool for people and into just a true platform where we try to really take a kind of methodology agnostic stance. We kind of like to step back in the background and really like to hold up other people's brands and kind of, let them come to the forefront and give them the tools that they need to execute whatever their dreams are, whether that's, hey, I want to monetize a little bit more at my gym, or, maybe it's I want to drive retention with my membership because I know that some people don't feel like they're seeing results, but if I can actually validate those results, great. Or maybe it's, if I'm a CrossFit gym or something, hey, I want to build my membership more. I need tools for sharing. I need tools to market results that you're going to get here because I need to differentiate from the box down the street that maybe I think is offering an inferior product, is not having the best coaching, the best programming, the best results. So you need a tool for that. Whatever it happens to be, we just want to be able to create those tools and allow them to be used by our coaches and athletes however they see fit for their unique needs.
Sure. So it kind of a flip from sort of a top down, like, let us decree henceforth that all shall follow this program as said by Train Heroic, to like, hey, you know what? Like, there's a lot of people with a lot of good ideas, and we sort of built an infrastructure that they can then utilize to put their stuff out into the world. Was there sort of a moment that you realized that was a good decision for the company? I mean, I know that, for example, with Amazon, right, that there's sort of the mythology of Jeff Bezos, putting out a survey when they were basically a book distributor saying, hey, like, is there anything else that you'd like us to carry? And he just got, like windshield wipers, like garbage bags, DVDs, just like any stuff. And he's like, oh, wow, I built this retail platform that enables me to sell stuff online very efficiently, and like people just want to buy anything online. Do you have kind of a moment like that you wanted to change where you're headed?
I don't know if there was like a singular moment at all. I do know that it was kind of gradual in nature, and I think some of it, sure, there's definitely a very real business applications and influences that were at play there. And then I think some were honestly like just totally motivated out of like personal need or itch. You know, I think a lot of businesses are found out of the fact that it's just like, hey, well, damn, I wish this kind of thing existed. And for myself personally, it's like I ended up, you know, building my network and kind of knowing a lot of really freaking cool coaches that just know some just incredible things, whether it's related to programming, whether it's related to periodization, or just kind of like architecting plans around events, whatever it happens to be. And I was like, man, I just wish I could have that stuff delivered right to me without having to like email them and call them and do all this nonsense. Maybe we could just create a forum for that so it was easier for all of us. And I think at our company, we have a lot of really authentic people to that cause, at least, where we're just kind of nerds for performance and fitness. And so knowing that we had a bunch of experts that wanted that, and knowing that we, as a bunch of maybe novices inside the company, wanted the experts, it was a pretty natural progression. Where it's like, hey, I think we could each help each other here, and we just need to build a broker for the deal. And so we hustled around and built that thing, and it's been great, really successful.
Sure. So for people who don't know, who are some of the folks who are offering programming on the Train Heroic Marketplace?
So I guess the whole thing started in a quick small test with Dave Spitz from California Strength, and that happened before it was truly a marketplace, but that was kind of our validation. So if there was a singular moment of, hey, everybody in the world needs this, it was we created a super cruddy little patch that allowed people to get California Strength's programming. We handle all the back end nonsense for them, so they don't have to deal with customer support. I lost my password. This sucks. That sucks. But we handle all that mess, the billing, the accounting, whatever. And so we make it much easier and friendly for the coach. And we did that with them, and their thing kind of took off, and they started making a good deal of money. We had a lot of people hit us up and just say, hey, I want that same thing they got. And we're like, it doesn't exist. And so we were like, oh, crap, it seems like a lot of people want that thing. So we ended up building it and giving it to them, and it's been kind of a smash hit.
Sure. So if there was a moment, it was the barbell wad coming to pass and saying, hey, you know what, this is a thing that people want, both from an athlete perspective and a coach perspective, so let's make it. Cool. So to kind of get into maybe some more, you know, startup culture stuff, you guys raised some money in Chicago. You worked out of 1871, an incubator there, and then ended up moving out to Colorado. I think a lot of people are sort of, you know, interested in and almost romanticize that startup culture of like, let's like raise some money and we got an idea and you know, all that type of stuff. And it's actually, you know, relatively brutal. But you know, without disclosing details you don't feel comfortable with, can you sort of walk us through what that looks like in terms of like, how do you have an idea? How do you raise money? How do you get anyone to give you money? What do you do with money when you have it? What happens if you run out? All that stuff.
Yeah. And I think this is where I get my super unique opportunity to start at the beginning of when we met, or when we kind of worked together and we're doing stuff. So maybe kind of three distinct phases, right? Phase one is we were super broke and we had no money. This is I'll call this the Todd phase. And during the Todd phase, we did anything we could possibly imagine to make money. Mind you, at this point, we quite literally did not have a product. We had nothing that people could buy. It was not tangible. It was quite literally a bunch of designs, first like kind of outlined on whiteboards and kind of thrown together by ourselves, and then designed by like a friendly design firm to kind of just validate that we were a thing. But it was definitely not something that was functional and usable. But during this broke Todd phase, as we'll call it, we did anything we could to make money. And that meant, you know, working with yourself.
Uh-oh. Did I lose you? I lost you.
Actually, nothing fun. We're like, oh, crap. You know, maybe we could throw a curriculum together and sell it to people. Ben. And then that'll get our brand out. So that's where Todd comes in. So audience members who want a fun story, And just a sneak peek of like, what does early stage startup life really look like? It looks like driving 7.5 hours to the tip of the state, the southern tip of Illinois, where nobody exists and cows far outnumber humans. And you end up sleeping on the floor of a flea bag motel and waking up at 6 a.m. and then teaching a lecture to people who have never squatted, exercised, or done anything except for jam ho-hos in their mouths for most of their existence. And it was, I mean, probably some of the best memories I have, some of my fondest memories of Train Heroic in general, but some of the most painful experiences ever, which I think contextually have just hardened us and kind of taught us that you can pretty much live through nearly anything. You can live through driving at 3 a.m. You can live through sleeping on floors. You can live through being bleary-eyed and not even eating before doing a 6-hour seminar. You can live through a lot of stuff. So that was kind of phase one. Phase two was we, you know, convinced a lot of really good folks to give us a little bit of money, build our initial calling, like proof of concept product that we pre-sold to a bunch of people. It kind of collapsed and fell on its face because it just wasn't ready. But it was enough for us to validate to the market that like there's a need for this thing and people want it. At the time, we still, you know, weren't really making any money as individuals or as a company, but just kind of like eking by, but continually getting to enough milestones and proving, yeah, people want this thing. Yeah, there's a need. Yeah, if we just improve X, Y, Z, this thing's going to work out. And eventually kind of our second and third rounds of funding where now we're like a totally legitimate company. You know, we have a really great office. We have an incredible support system that we can be more thankful for and being kind of a part of the Peaksware family, which is our portfolio group, and truly learning about like what it takes to make great software and what it means to be a great software as a service company, more specifically, with a heavy emphasis on the service part, as we put it. And so I think three totally distinct phases, all of which are incredibly freaking hard, and all of them hurt a lot. I wouldn't wish this on anybody except for the bravest souls, but I would say that for me personally, as a person who is only kind of in it for the journey and not necessarily for the end itself, there's certainly no other way I would have it, because I've learned more through going through that kind of, all those thresholds, all those terrible tests, than I could possibly be, you know, by getting my MBA, getting my, you know, law degree and everything else in between. And so I think that's what's been the most rewarding thing to me, is having cool experiences, having hilarious memories, and then just learning along the way and helping great people.
Sure. So one of the things that I see a lot with people who, you know, are interested in starting a gym, starting a company, they have an idea for something, is that they want to wait, right? They want to come up with like the perfect version of it and then put it out there. And then, you know, they think that if it's perfect from the start, that all of a sudden it'll just blow up and have success. And your path is the exact opposite, which is like, we have no product, but we're just going to like travel around and try to sell it anyway. What gave you the balls to do that?
I don't know if it was balls. I think it's like stupidity for one. But like for two, I think like these like blow up success, you know, in the software world, you know, those companies are actually called unicorns, and they're called that for a reason, because they literally don't exist statistically. You know, when you hear about the Ubers and the, you know, like the Snapchats of the world, companies that go from, you know, zero to billions within just 2-3 years, you're talking about companies that are the 1% of the 1% of the 1% of the 1% of the 1%. You know, they don't exist. So there's like, I guess it's no different than anything else in our life, where like mainstream media clouds the notion of what's real and what's achievable in a narrow period of time. But like, I think when you get into it, you just realize it's like anything else in life. If you want it to be meaningful, if you want it to be successful, it's going to take a Herculean effort. It's going to take a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, but it's going to be cool, you know, and you really got to embrace the suck. You really got to love the challenge. And you really got to stop focusing on, you know, where you're not, but focus on, you know, what have you gotten out of the experience to date, and what more can you get out of the experience along the way? And is that what you want? You know, and for us, the answer is resoundingly yes. You know, that I want all that crap. I want the hard stuff. I want the naughty stuff. I want the stuff that's going to hurt a little bit, because that's where the good stuff happens to be for me.
Sure. So along with that concept of sort of, you know, trying to get started and like having an idea and getting out there, there's sort of this, you know, mythical concept of like raising money and getting funded, which is tricky and it's complicated and it's hard, and you've done it a few times. How were you able to convince people to invest in your idea, A, when you didn't have one, or not an idea, but you didn't have a product, and then B, what were you able to do to, you know, show that you had had some success and that all you needed was a bit more cash in the bank and you're going to be able to take it to the next level?
Great question. You should ask them. but in all honesty, I think like maybe potentially what's more interesting is like, you know, not just – you know, how do we convince some people to do this? Because we failed with most people, right? We failed with thousands, quite literally thousands of contacts to raise funding. And I think as much as like, you know, how were we successful? It was like also just assessing what I might define as the funding market and say, you know, which opportunities are going to be right for this for us? You know, how are we going to create a good partnership? Because certain investors are going to be good for a company like Train Heroic, be it that they're authentic to this space and know what we're doing, whether that's software as a service, whether that's strength and conditioning, whether that's fitness, whether that's deliberate practice, all of those. If they have knowledge in any of those fields, they might think we're interesting. If they have knowledge in all of those things, they might think we're the coolest thing since sliced bread. If they have no knowledge in any of those things, they're probably not for us. You know, later on top of that, do they have appetite for risk? Are they comfortable with something that is going to be great or it's going to be fail? You know, all of those things need to just, it's kind of just like a match.com for investing, right? It's like, check all the boxes. But I think it's not necessarily like, you know, how did we hoodwink people into going along for our wild ride? It's more so, you know, how did we seek the right partners? What did we do to find the right match for us? And that was truly what it turned out to be. And I think, you know, the long story short, the partners we have today could not be more authentic to what we're doing, both software, both deliberate practice, both training, fitness, et cetera, as well as what we were very interested in, which is more of a slow growth and organic kind of growth engine versus kind of the traditionally funded VC model where things are going to be kind of operating at a breakneck pace and it's either, you know, succeed at a 100x, you know, of your original valuation or burn out and fail. I kind of like more of a success by any means necessary type of approach and success for certain. And that's kind of what we take here at Peaksware, where we really invest carefully. There's a whole lot of discipline and rigor to our process versus kind of a arm's length relationship, as many investors have. We're hands-on. Things are up to date within, you know, the week. Everybody's abreast of what's going on, and everybody can help out. So it's more kind of a family than it is this weird kind of top-down type of relationship.
Sure. So you still basically control your own company, your own culture, but you're kind of integrated and plugged in with a lot of the stuff that Peaksware has going on, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Got it. So let's talk about you, Ben. Let's not just talk about Train Heroic. So running a startup is probably more stressful than running a gym, which I know personally is very stressful and destroys all semblance of work-life balance. What is that like for you? Do you have work-life balance? How do you prioritize your time? What does a day look like for you?
Dang. I mean, do I start with breakfast?
Yeah.
Because I don't have it a lot of times.
Oh, do you intermittent fast, man? Like, also.
Yeah, it's all the rage right now. Let's see. What does work-life balance mean? You know, I think that I don't even know if I'm in love with that term work-life balance, because I feel like it implies that work's a negative thing and life is a good thing. You know, it's like I have like work-life synergy, which is to say that like everything I do in work, I enjoy. If I didn't, not everything. I mean, if I fill out spreadsheets, I do a ton of forms, 1,000
follow up emails that aren't necessarily fun, but the spirit of what I'm doing, I totally love.
Sure.
Totally love. And the people I work with every day, I totally love. They're awesome. Whether it's our customers, whether it's our developers, whether it's our salespeople, they're all great. You know, we work with cool people. So it starts there. It's like, I don't have to necessarily overemphasize this work-life balance equation because I actually enjoy both sides of it. And I'm not going to be unhappy if one is somehow weighted a little bit heavier at given at certain periods of time than the other one. That being said, I would probably be a freaking weirdo if only I was focused on just work. And I don't think people would like me that much.
Do people like you now?
I don't know. Again, ask them. I do think it's actually useful and helpful to be a well-rounded individual. So I think that's more the thing I'm trying to solve for. It's like, how can I do a myriad of things so that I'm both more whole as a person and probably more interesting to other people? And so prioritizing that, there's probably the things that I do that are most helpful is that I leave my computer at the office every day. My girlfriend's listening, she'll be mad because she's going to tell me I still use my phone. But I try to really limit that at home. I start the morning really early. Thomas Jefferson, once upon a time, I read a quote, I think when I was 16, and I probably have followed it since then. But he said, the sun never beats me up out of bed. And I kind of feel the same way where it's like, I'm going to get up before the sun because most people get up after the sun. And if I can beat those people, then over time, I'm probably going to get a whole lot more done than they will. I'm also just not a night person. Like a lot of things happen at night that I'm probably just not that awesome with, you know, I'm not a big partier. I'm not big on all the night lights. I like to just kind of hang out and kind of wind down. So logistically speaking, wake up super early, ideally work out of some sort, do something active. And then the biggest priority, I think, for me is get to the office and do something creative. I've even kind of like partitioned my day into two segments where I'm kind of making in the mornings and managing in the afternoons. I tend to be more creative, and I think holistically people tend to be after some period of rest and also exercise. So I try to just stack those things on top of one another to have this awesome performance cocktail of sorts. And then I kind of deal with the day-to-day, working with the team, working with sales stuff, working with biz dev, all that kind of crap near the end of the day when I'm a little more burnt out and less creative. And then I get home and, again, I leave my computer there. I come home quite literally with nothing in my hands. And I think that like metaphor of not even having a backpack, not even holding anything weighing me down, allows me to partition those two and have a really healthy break from the work day. I get home at a semi-reasonable hour and then just unwind. And that typically to me looks like a whole lot of reading. And it looks like maybe watching a movie here and there. We don't really use TV in any way, shape, or time form, or it might be hanging out with my dog, seeing friends, doing all that kind of stuff that humans do.
Yeah, but do you still check your email on your phone at home?
Occasionally, yeah. I'm a freaking I run a startup, and so like I could sit here and say I'm this like perfect self-help guru dude that doesn't do any of those things, but like no, the thing freaking bleep. You know, I don't have notifications, text, social, email, or otherwise. So that's positive. But I do have compulsive need to stay in touch with what's going on. So I certainly check that once or twice when I'm at home. I try not to respond. I try not to encourage those behaviors globally as a team. But they happen and I get it.
Sure. So in general, you seem to have a pretty higher order theoretical framework for a lot of what you're doing, right? Both in terms of the company, in terms of your own lifestyle and trying to find, you know, a balance there, even though you said you kind of don't like that term, synergy there to get all corporate
speak. They support one another.
Yeah, synergy.
My life supports my work.
Work-life synergy. Where does this stuff come from? What books do you read? Do you listen to podcasts? Where do all your frameworks come from?
Everything comes from Todd Neef. So anybody who's listening, check that dude out. Apart from that, I read a ton. I've been a historically really slow reader. I was an English major in college, creative writing dude, but I read really slow, and I don't even know how I got through college doing so. So even 2 months ago, I kind of challenged myself to learn how to speed read, and so I've tripled my reading speed, which is now really fun because now I get to read more stuff faster. And I've like actually developed this weird, you know, because people say like, well, does your comprehension taper off? Do you not even understand what you're reading? And it's like, no, now I read in pictures and I can actually see everything. Feels like I'm in a movie. It's way cooler. So I recommend that to anybody. But I typically chew through 6 or 7 books a month, a couple of which are on audio, and then, you know, a handful of which are old school methods. I don't like ebooks or any of that. I like it paperback or hard copy for sure. But what do I read? A whole lot of business stuff, because that's where I spend a good chunk of my time. But I try to read at least 2 fiction books a month. I'm reading our developers have encouraged me to read 2 books concurrently. One is called Daemon and the other one's called Ready Player One. So I'm now reading maybe some nerd fiction. If you throw it into
like
that
sci-fi,
it's like, yeah, it's sci-fi-ish. There's no aliens, but it's more tech-fi. Sure. I mean, like
cyberpunk,
yeah, for sure. And then on the business side, you know, I read any order of things, whether it's related to like general performance improvement, you know, sales stuff, marketing stuff, management stuff, what have you.
What's a good one you read recently?
Right now I'm reading Influence by Robert Cialdini. That's a good one.
The classic.
Yeah, it's a classic. Less classic, maybe more new. Let's see, I read Conscious Capitalism last month.
Is that the Whole Foods book?
Yes. Okay. Yep. Creativity Inc.'s a good one for anybody who likes creativity and hope.
Yeah, that one's great. So some of the processes that Pixar went through just in terms of like iterating on their creative stuff is super fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I really like to study people who I admire. That's something I've always done. In fact, a guy I knew in Chicago, a startup guy, was totally not self-educated but homeschooled. I thought it was fascinating. One of the things that he was required to do in his homeschooling by his parents was every month he had to read a book about somebody he admired. So like biographies, autobiographies, whatever. And it's funny because he became a pretty successful dude. And I think a lot of it's attributed to the fact he just studied the patterns of successful people. Sure. And saw what made them tick and kind of what their philosophies and underpinnings were. And I've kind of been the same way. Not because my parents made me, but just because that stuff fascinates me. And I think the reason it fascinates me is like, I truly believe we're all put here on earth for a purpose, not in some like weird spiritual type way, but you know, we have through our genetic makeup, our sociological makeup and otherwise like a certain amount of tools at our disposal. And I just feel like it's a freaking crying shame if anybody wastes that. And so studying the people who have truly leveraged those things to the utmost and have made the most out of them seems to be the most socially responsible shit we could be doing.
There you go. It's a good mantra if I've ever heard one.
Yeah. Thank you.
all right, man. So let's go ahead and wrap this up. We'll be respectful of your time since we're a bit over. And I want to just give everyone a little bit of a push to go ahead and check out Train Heroic. Head over to trainheroic.com. You can sign up as either an athlete or a coach. We use it at South Loop Strength and Conditioning for our group class programming and for our competitor programming. So if you're looking for a way to give athletes an opportunity to track their results, it's the best software on the market that I've seen for that in terms of flexibility and user interface and, you know, ability to kind of keep track of, you know, what your bench press has been in the past. So you kind of know where you're at with all that stuff. And then in the marketplace as well for athletes, there's a lot of different programs, right? Ben already talked about Barbell WOD, which I think is the most well-known program in the Train Heroic marketplace, but there's a bunch of stuff in there. There's, you know, CrossFit competition programming. There's some gymnastic skill work that I believe Dusty Highland does. There's the Barbell WOD, obviously. So athletes and coaches, take a look at Train Heroic. It's worth the time to try it out and get set up with it and see if it works for you in terms of tracking your results or doing programming or keeping track of stuff at your gym. And Ben, anything else you want the fine folks to check out from you? What do you guys got going on next?
We got a whole lot of new stuff coming out. We got a new iPhone app coming out next month. We have private coaching. It's going to be a big deal. Anybody who does the private coaching type thing but wants to take it online and extend their client base, we'll be launching private coaching in about 45 days or so. So that should be a big one for folks to check out. But apart from that, I don't know. I think that's about it. I just really appreciate you having me on today, Todd. Always good to just connect and kind of rap and bounce ideas off one another. Hope you benefit from that.
No, it's good stuff. I mean, like I said, you know, you have all these, you know, impressive results and impressive actions you've taken and kind of, you know, a pretty interesting path in terms of teaching to CrossFit coach to startup, you know, CEO. And you also have a lot of self-awareness about it. And then, like I said, a lot of the frameworks that you have in terms of decision-making and goal setting and trying to constantly iterate, you know, just it's awesome to see how that is all playing out. So thanks for coming on, man. And we'll be in touch about life.
All right, Todd. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man.